And we will move back to some news articles now. This one is from page B3, and it is, Straw Forts Could Help Save New Coral from Fish. This is by David Fisher of the Associated Press. Dateline, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. South Florida researchers trying to prevent predatory fish from devouring laboratory-grown coral are grasping at biodegradable straws in an effort to restore what some call the rainforest of the sea. Scientists around the world have been working for years to address the decline of coral reef populations. Just last summer, reef rescue groups in South Florida and the Florida Keys were trying to save coral from rising ocean temperatures. Besides working to keep existing coral alive, researchers have also been growing new coral in labs and then placing them in the ocean. But protecting the underwater ecosystem that maintains upwards of 25% of all marine species is not easy. Even more challenging is making sure that coral grown in a laboratory and placed into the ocean doesn't become expensive fish food. Marine researcher Kyle Pisano said one problem is that predators like parrotfish attempt to bite and destroy the newly transplanted coral in areas like South Florida, leaving them with less than a 40% survival rate. With projects calling for thousands of coral to be planted over the next year and tens of thousands of coral to be planted over the next decade, the losses add up when coral pieces can cost more than $100 each. Pisano and his partner, Kirk Dotson, have developed the Coral Fort, claiming the small biodegradable cage that's made in part with drinking straws boosts the survival rate of transplanted coral to over 90%. Parrotfish on the reef really, really enjoy biting a newly transplanted coral, Pisano said. They treat it kind of like popcorn. Fortunately, the fish eventually lose interest in the coral as it matures, but scientists need to protect the coral in the meantime. Stainless steel and PVC pipe barriers have been set up around transplanted coral in the past, but those barriers needed to be cleaned of algae growth and eventually removed. Pisano had the idea of creating a protective barrier that would eventually dissolve, eliminating the need to maintain or remove it. He began conducting offshore experiments with biodegradable coral cages as part of a master's degree program at Nova Southeastern University. He uses a substance called polyhydroxyalkanoate, a biopolymer derived from the fermentation of canola oil. PHA biodegrades in the ocean, leaving only water and carbon dioxide. His findings were published last year. The coral cage consists of a limestone disc surrounded by 8 vertical Fade brand drinking straws made by Atlanta-based WinCup Incorporated. The device doesn't have a top, Pisano said, because the juvenile coral needs sunlight and the parrotfish don't generally want to position themselves facing downward to eat. Dotson, a retired aerospace engineer, met Pisano through his professor at Nova Southeastern, and the two formed Reef Fortify Incorporated to further develop and market the patent-pending Coral Fort. The first batch of cages were priced at $12 each, but Pisano and Dotson believe that could change as production scales up. Early prototypes of the cage, made from Fade's standard drinking straws, were able to protect the coral for about 2 months before dissolving in the ocean, but that wasn't quite long enough to outlast the interest of parrotfish. When Pisano and Dotson reached out to Fade for help, the company assured them that it could make virtually any custom shape from its biodegradable PHA material. But it's turning out that the boba straws, straight out of the box, work just fine, Dotson said. Boba straws are wider and thicker than normal drinking straws. They're used for a tea-based boba drink that includes tapioca balls at the bottom of the cup. For Pisano and Dotson, that extra thickness means the straws last just long enough to protect the growing coral before harmlessly disappearing. Reef Fortify is hoping to work with reef restoration projects all over the world. The coral forts are already being used by researchers at Nova Southeastern and the University of Miami, as well as Hawaii's Division of Aquatic Resources. Rich Karp, a coral researcher at the University of Miami, said they've been using the coral forts for about a month. He pointed out that doing any work underwater takes a great deal of time and effort, so having a protective cage that dissolves when it's no longer needed basically cuts their work in half. Simply caging corals and then removing the cages later, that's two times the amount of work, two times the amount of bottom time, Karp said, and it's not really scalable. Experts say coral reefs are a significant part of the oceanic ecosystem. They occupy less than 1% of the ocean worldwide, but provide food and shelter to nearly 25% of sea life. Coral reefs also help to protect humans and their homes along the coastline from storm surges during hurricanes. And again, that article from page B3 was Straw Forts Could Help Save New Coral from Fish, by David Fisher of the Associated Press. Tori?
Thank you, Glenn. Our main news section, which is our local news section on page A12, brings us this article titled Outdoor Fest Showcases Chesterfield's Offerings, by Thad Green of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. The inaugural Chesterfield Outdoor Fest provided families and individuals opportunities to experience the county's outdoor recreation offerings and learn about building a sustainable community. I just wanted to come check out what they had going on and get out of the house, said Megan Evans of Dinwiddie, who brought her four children to the festival. The kids all have somewhere they can run and play. It's been really nice. Saturday's free festival was held at the Chesterfield County Fairgrounds. Last year, the county held an Earth Day event that was primarily confined to the exhibit hall at the fairgrounds. With Outdoor Fest, Chesterfield now has an expanded outdoor spring showcase that spreads across a larger chunk of the property. It is an awesome opportunity for us to inform people about the environment, said Clover Hill District Supervisor Jessica Schneider. There's some great vendors here talking about that stuff. The day began with the Earth Day 5K and the Kids Mile, followed by the festivities at the fairgrounds. The activities included a rainbow trout fishing pool, a live butterfly feeding area, and a kids' play zone. The Touch a Truck space allowed kids to take their seats on a variety of vehicles, such as police motorcycles, an excavator, and a SWAT armor truck. The festival serves as part of the county's Experience Chesterfield initiative that launched more than 3 weeks ago. The inaugural Outdoor Fest is a way to showcase all the adventures and ways to explore Chesterfield County, said J.C. Poma, Executive Director of Sports, Visitation, and Entertainment for the county. Experience Chesterfield is our storytelling platform, and we get to do it through events like this. Heavenly Bramble of Chesterfield attended Outdoor Fest with her husband and three sons. She said her kids loved the Touch a Truck and other activities like the inflatable bounce house and rock climbing wall. Bramble added that the family-friendly action and the chance to explore the county's outdoor scene at a low cost made for an appealing event. "That's what drew us in," she said. "They have a lot to see and explore for the kids throughout the day." Derek Daniels of Richmond said his 6-year-old grandson, Riley, enjoyed the bounce house, the BMX stunt show, and sitting in a Virginia State Police helicopter. Daniel said he enjoys these types of outdoor events. "I want more of them," he said. "Riley's getting bigger, so I want to go outside more." All in MBT, which provides private mountain bike instruction in Chesterfield, set up a demo area at Outdoor Fest to teach and show off some mountain biking skills. Like many of the other organizations and vendors, All In MTB welcomed the chance to connect with community members at the event. "My work here is to showcase biking, but also to engage with the community and share with them the resources like Pocahontas State Park," said Marley Smith, All In MTB owner. "Our whole purpose here is to say everything we're doing, you can do here in Chesterfield." And that article from page A10 of our main news section was titled Outdoor Fest Showcases Chesterfield's Offerings by Thad Green of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Glenn?
Thank you, Tori. Our next article from page A10 is Maggie Walker Team Will Vie in Robotics Event by Chelsea Jackson of the Times-Dispatch. The robotics team of Maggie L. Walker Governor's School, the Mech Tech Dragons, is headed to Houston on Tuesday to compete in the FIRST Championship against the top robotics teams in the world. FIRST, for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology, is an international organization with the mission of encouraging more students to be interested in pursuing education in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM. The competition brings together 600 top robotics teams competing in a series elimination round-style qualifying matches, division playoffs, and the final round called the Einsteins. This is the Mech Tech Dragons' second year in a row qualifying for FIRST, after having success in statewide competitions over the past few months. Last year, the team was a finalist in its division, just 6 points away from the Einstein match. It's a big deal for them to make it 2 years in a row. That hasn't happened here in a while, said Mark Saylor, coach for the Mech Tech Dragons. Before qualifying in 2023, the team last appeared in the FIRST competition in 2018. The members are ready to return and excited to compete. Junior Matthew Tran is the team's build lead and driver. This is Tran's third year on the team. I lead, organize, and manage all of the actual construction of the physical parts of the robot. We run the software off of any old laptop and control the robot with PlayStation controllers, Tran said. I'm very excited. It's been our goal all season to make it here, and I'm just so happy that we were able to pull it off. The team is made up of 80 Maggie Walker students of all grade levels. 34 students are set to head to Houston, along with 10 mentors and chaperones. A majority of the group will travel by bus and some by plane. When the Mech Tech Dragons arrive, they will unload their equipment and set up their pit area for their crew. Lydia Woodall is the CEO, helping the team function. I coordinate between the different sections of our team, making sure that everyone's on the same page, as well as coordinating for events, Woodall said. Joining the Maggie Walker team her freshman year, Woodall says there is a professionalism and camaraderie among FIRST contestants. If something is broken, you'll see every team around them say, "Hey, is there something I can do to help?" she said. The FIRST Championship is about more than robots and winning, and so are the Mech Tech Dragons. Maggie Walker's robotics program not only teaches students technical skills, but also public speaking and presentation skills. An element of the FIRST Championship includes a presentation for judges for a chance to win the Impact Award, which honors the team that best embodies FIRST's mission. Cheryl Kaplan, a retired lawyer, has volunteered with Maggie Walker's robotics team since 2016 and is inspired by her children's positive experience in the robotics program at Deep Run High School. I watched my sons grow and flourish in the program. I want to give other kids that opportunity as well, said Kaplan, who oversees the community outreach side of Maggie Walker's program. The team visits other Richmond public schools to spread excitement about robotics and STEM. We take smaller robots out into Richmond public schools and teach them STEM classes. That's our secondary mission, not only to impact our school, but also to help in our local community, Kaplan said. Excuse me. The Mech Tech Dragons recently visited Holman Middle School to meet with its Girls in STEM program. Porth Tornikar, a senior, handles day-to-day operations, project management, and community outreach. Last year, Tornikar was the team's chief outreach officer. His passion for STEM and community outreach began when he visited the Maggie Walker Robotics Team STEM Day event in seventh grade. Once accepted to Maggie Walker, Tornikar said he signed up for robotics right away. "I really wanted to make a difference," he said. "I know everyone says that, but it's really something I want to do. Teaching people has always been a passion, and I was introduced to robotics through our STEM Day event, so that was the first thing I did, was volunteer to help set that up. The Mech Tech Dragons are on a mission to make STEM more accessible, even working with legislation this year to pass a resolution that designates March 31st as First Robotics Day in Virginia. We thought about how we can make FIRST more accessible, Tornikar said. Because we are a government and international studies school, but we are also a STEM outlet, so how can we merge the two? The team will head out Tuesday morning from Maggie Walker. Practice matches will begin Wednesday evening. We've gained a lot of electrical knowledge and a lot of build knowledge. The fact that we've learned what does not work means now we have a better idea, Tornikar said. And we've been to FIRST before, so we know what our competition is going to be like and what their strategies are. So I think we have a much better idea of what we want to do this year, and hopefully we can win our field and go to Einstein Field. And again, that article from page A10 was Maggie Walker Team Will Vie in Robotics Event by Chelsea Jackson of the Times-Dispatch. Tori?
Thank you, Glenn. We turn back to our commentary section with this article from page B2, which comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. It's titled, No Labels, No Alternative, and No Escape. Voters don't want Biden or Trump, but U.S. has two-party system without fragmentation. Many Americans are unenthused, to say the least, about a 2024 grudge match between two grumpy old men, President Joe Biden and Donald Trump. But after months of no labels teasing an alternative unity ticket, it pulled the plug after failing to find a candidate. The exercise says something about the country's political system and this moment. No labels isn't wrong that many voters think the two big parties are serving up the equivalent of week-old leftovers. In the latest Harvard-Harris poll, 62% and 71% of independents say the nation needs another choice. Or look at the recent primaries. In Wisconsin, nearly 21% of Republicans spurned Trump, with 12.8% for Nikki Haley and 3.3% for Ron DeSantis, long after both left the race. In Rhode Island, more than 17% of Democrats refused Biden, with 14.8% for uncommitted and 2.6% for Dean Phillips. Yet a long-standing feature of America's political system is a balance between two major parties. The Electoral College forces a majority winner among the states. Even if an upstart third party earned a plurality, say 40%, for its presidential nominee, this would throw the election to Congress, back to the control of Republican and Democrats. Confounding the difficulty is that third parties are required to hustle merely to get their candidates on the ballot, though No Labels said it had qualified in 21 states. Two-party systems have drawbacks, but the upside is that they avoid the political fragmentation that ails many parliamentary countries, where it's a struggle to put together any kind of governing coalition. See Israel or much of Europe. Also, successful political movements tend to rally voters to some specific issue or cause, and it was never clear what a no-labels agenda would look like. Without a larger cause, No Labels needed a stronger political personality. One by one, its best prospects said no. Some didn't want to be a spoiler. Given those dynamics, it was always a long shot that a unity ticket straight out of a buddy cop movie, Larry Hogan for vice president with VP Joe Manchin riding sidecar or vice versa, could take mellow centrism to the Oval Office. The public is left with an unappealing choice. Biden and Trump are in a codependent political relationship. Each imagines that he's the only candidate who can defeat the other, when the truth is that each is being propped up by the other's flaws. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is no good alternative. He's a vessel for the discontented, a man of the left who faints to the populist right. Unlike No Labels, Kennedy apparently doesn't mind being a spoiler, but which side he'll hurt more is hard to guess. It's going to be a mean and ugly campaign, and a perilous 4 years of high polarization no matter who wins. On the bright side, At least the winner can only serve one more term. And that commentary from the Wall Street Journal was titled, No Labels, No Alternative, and No Escape. Voters don't want Biden or Trump, but U.S. has two-party system without fragmentation. Glenn?
Thank you, Tori. That's all the time we have for reading today's Sunday, April 14th, Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Glenn Wilkinson, along with
Tori Tindall
for Virginia Voice. This program is brought to you through the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.